Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to H-Town Wheelhouse. Tonight, we will be joined by Josh Rojas of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Catching up with him, last time I spoke with him, he was with Round Rock. Since then, he's been traded, was in the blockbuster trade to bring Zach Greinke to Houston. We're going to find out what he's doing in the offseason, what his expectations are for 2020, and maybe some of the highlights of his first taste of the big leagues from this past year. Stay tuned. My interview next with Josh Rojas. Hey guys, it's H-Town Wheelhouse. Thanks for tuning in. And tonight I am joined with Major League Baseball player of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Josh Rojas. Josh, how are you doing this evening?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Last time we spoke, Josh, my son and I made a trip to Round Rock and we interviewed you. We interviewed Colin McKee. We interviewed Brandon Bielak. And since then, things have changed a little bit, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, just a little.
So I want to just jump right into it. You know, with the fans not being involved in the inner workings of Major League Baseball, the minor league system, how things work, whenever you were traded – in the Zach Greinke trade, did that come to you as a was it a surprise? Did you have some hint that it was going to happen?
Yeah, no, it's a complete surprise. You kind of, I mean, we hear the same rumors that everybody else is hearing about what might happen and what could happen, but we're just as in the dark as everybody else, including I'm pretty sure even Zach Greinke wasn't really aware that he was getting traded. Until it happens. So yeah, I think we're all in the dark, and then it happens, and they try to let you know as soon as possible before media finds out.
Right. So where were you when you found out? Was it before a game getting ready? Was it after?
Yeah. So you've been to Round Rock. It was right kind of where we did the interview up at the top of the stairs above the field.
Okay.
I was actually – we actually watched the final seconds of the trade deadline on MLB Network. And then that had passed. The deadline had hit, so we thought everybody was staying. So we actually went out onto the field to start getting ready for our game that day. So it was me and a couple other guys. We're out taking ground balls. We hear somebody come out of the locker room and yell down from the steps that Derek Fisher had just gotten traded. And then they yelled back down 5 minutes later that Greinke was coming to the Astros, but they hadn't named the other players yet. So we kind of were on edge about that. We knew somebody in our clubhouse was probably going to go for a name like that, being that we had a lot of talented players in that clubhouse. So we were kind of waiting to see when the news would come out, but we were still taking a couple guys were still taking ground balls. And then that's when our manager got the call, Mickey Story. And he looked over at me and he pointed at me and he said, he kind of gave me the signal that you're done.
Oh, wow. Wow. So,
yeah.
So your immediate reaction, were you excited? Were you upset? I mean, if you don't mind sharing that stuff, I don't know.
I was actually more just like confused on like what was supposed to happen now. I was more worried about what had to be done now that I just got traded. Like, where am I going to go? What am I going to do with all my stuff? How am I going to get my stuff moved?
Oh, wow.
I mean, that was kind of all the first logistics, or the first thing that comes to your mind is the logistics of everything and how it's going to work. So yeah, that was my first thought was what's going to happen now. And then I kind of tried to play it as like, all right, let's just act like it didn't happen for a little bit. And I went back to taking ground balls. And the trainer came out and told me, like, you're not on our team anymore. You got to kind of get your stuff packed up. And, I mean, I could hang out. I just couldn't take ground balls or anything for liability issues. So
yeah, they're like, you're no longer covered under our insurance, Mr. Rojas.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that fast. You're a new part of a new organization. So, yeah, I mean, I immediately had to go home and do laundry and get that started. Came back and watched the end of their game that night. Hung out with some of my teammates for the last time. So far, it's been the last time.
Wow.
And then, yeah, finished packing up all my stuff. And the next morning, I was off to Reno.
Wow, yeah. So that, those are really, really, really cool insights from a fan's perspective, because, the fans and the Twitter warriors and the keyboard commander, they're online going, trade this guy, trade that guy, and we forget, hey, you guys are human just like us. Like, Josh, you were probably like, dang, I should have done laundry like two nights ago.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and that's the thing. It was probably easier for someone like me where I was in an apartment with three other teammates, and I knew after I got traded, there was going to be somebody that gets called up and fills in my spot in the apartment. But I couldn't imagine for the guys that, like Fisher, he had his own place. He had his girlfriend was living with him, so that's a lot of people and a lot of things you have to get up and moved the next day.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, because he had already kind of he had almost really submitted it, I guess grounded himself with the Astros because he had that he was in the 2017 run with them, and so I think everybody just thought Fisher was going to be one of those guys that was going to hang around and eventually grab like a utility spot. I think when he got traded, a lot of people in Houston were like, "What? Like, huh?" And so. But yeah, so I know that that you had the other guys traded around you, Seth Beer, Buskakis, and and the Astros rookie pitcher Corbin Martin. I know he's been going through rehab and stuff. Did you play with any of the other guys that were? Because I
Yeah,
think.
I played with all three of them actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so I played with Corbin and JB. I played with the most. So me and Corbin actually, we both got called up to Double A. We played all together. We played in Tri-Cities together. He actually didn't come up to Quad Cities with me. But then the following year, we both started in High A, which was 2018. We got called up to Double A together. And then this year was the first year he started. We didn't start together. He started in Triple A, I started in Double A. But then we ended up meeting up again in Triple A. So I played with Corbin the most. And then I played with JB Bukauskas. I played with him a whole lot in Corpus Christi as well. And then Seth Beer, I played with this whole season he was in, or no, maybe just for a month. Yeah, maybe a month or so he was in Corpus Christi with me. So I played a good amount with all of them, and we had a little group chat immediately as soon as we got traded. Just to, I mean, we weren't going to know anybody. It was going to be completely new. So we kind of stayed in touch just to communicate on how things were going, how the new facilities and stuff are, how it compares, all that kind of stuff that you want to know.
No, yeah, definitely. And I guess it's always good to be in a I guess that's one of the advantages of being in a multiplayer trade, especially if y'all are kind of around the same point in your career, rather than like, a short season. I guess a short season guy wouldn't go, but like a high A guy, a double A guy, and a you know what I'm saying? So that's cool. That I guess for you, I'm sure just getting to know you in that one interview. Of course, we don't have an extensive, conversation history, but with the one interview we did, you came across to me as someone who seems to be pretty laid back and rolls with the punches, and I'm assuming you saw this as an opportunity. I guess once like the dust settled, you were like, okay, this is going to be good for me, because you and I had talked about adjustments you had made, and you had made, I mean, huge improvements. You were doing really, really well with, Round Rock. And so, is that how you took it? Once the dust settled, once the details got ironed out, you were like, okay, this is a really good opportunity for me and my career going forward.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it was that's I told a lot of people that it was kind of mixed emotions in that. I heard a couple rumored trades, just small rumors to teams that I've heard about, and I was really like nervous on getting traded because I knew I was in such a great place with the Astros and a great organization that I didn't want to get traded to a situation that was not going to be beneficial to me, or it was going to be a tough place to be or anything like that. So that's always the worry with the trade deadline coming up. especially when your name has been in some rumors. But yeah, the D-backs trade definitely caught me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it. But when it did happen, it was the emotions of having to say bye to players you've worked really hard with the last couple of years, and you guys have grown together. And I played with those guys since we got drafted, and played with them in low A, and we're all the way up in triple A now. So it was pretty fun with those guys. But then I knew that the trade, being in the Greinke trade one, was good for me, and that they valued me as a player. And also it was going to be good for me because it was going to be a good opportunity for me to make the big league team and play. So
No, yeah, that.
yeah, those were the plus factors of getting traded.
No, yeah, true, and that's something that like I said, for me, on the outside looking in, whenever it is for a big name and for a respected veteran like Zach Greinke, I mean, I remember when Zach Greinke first made it into the major leagues and all the buzz about him and the strikeouts and all that stuff, and to be a part of a trade like that. You have to have a significant potential, or there has to be a high order of thinking of these players are going to be guys that are going to contribute on the major league level, rather than it, being a, I guess, a mid-range to average player, and oh, let's throw in a couple minor leaguers here or there just to kind of, you know what
Right.
I'm saying, just to suck up some of the money gap or whatever.
Yes.
So that's definitely cool. So tell me, how long? So like you arrived, you said in Reno. How long did it take you to get to Phoenix to like play your first game?
So I got traded on the 31st. I was in Reno August 1st. I had to do all my physical and all that stuff. So I didn't play the first day. Then August 2nd was my first game. And then I got called up August 12th.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so it was really fast.
No, hey man, there's nothing like getting slingshotted up into the big league roster.
Yeah, I'll take it.
And definitely congratulations on that. Now, was your I believe wasn't your first game in Arizona?
No, my first
It
game was
wasn't.
in Colorado. So I played one series in Colorado and then we went back to AZ.
Okay. Was your family able to be at your first game when you were called
Yeah,
up?
so the Diamondbacks actually took care of all of that. They flew out my parents and got them a place to stay. So
Wow.
my uncle and my two cousins also made the trip.
That is very cool. So kind of take us through that first day, maybe the evening of, as you're about to go to sleep or try to sleep, and then kind of what was that day like culminating into like when the game started?
Yeah, so I mean, again, it was basically a lot of logistics stuff to take care of first. So yeah, I get told before our game on the 12th, right before the game, they tell me, "Hey, you're going up to the big leagues. You're going to meet the team in Colorado. You're leaving today."
Wow.
So I was like, "Okay." So we were on the road currently, so I had to go back to the hotel, pack up all my stuff, get to the airport. Then I was at the airport probably about 20, 30 minutes before my flight took off.
Wow.
Or like once I got through security and all that, I just sat down for like 20, 30 minutes before my flight takes off. And then I landed in Colorado. I got picked up there. They took me to the hotel. And then by the time I had landed, I had all the information I needed, like emails and text messages on what hotel to go to and where to meet the driver to pick me up and where to be the next day, what time the bus left to the field. So yeah, once I got to the hotel, I kind of just made sure I got all that taken care of, made sure I knew what time I had to wake up the next morning, and then it was kind of just relaxed until I was able to fall asleep and wake up for that next day to take the bus to the field.
Very cool. Very cool. So, So when you're there, is there much interaction that you get with your family prior to the game, or is it such a, it's so new and like you said, just everything going on that maybe you just kind of like, they're there, or did you get to interact with, like, did y'all get to have breakfast that morning,
Yeah,
or
no, I tried to keep it the same, whereas like I just went to the field like normally, just like I had been doing on the road. So yeah, I woke up, I went and ate on my own. I took the bus to the field. But then once I was at the field, they were allowed to come down early for batting practice and take pictures and all this stuff. So I talked to them and hung out with them at the field before the game, and then again after the game, obviously went out to eat. So that was the interaction that we had.
Awesome. So your first big league hit, I did some research, did some digging, and you were up against McGee. Do you remember what the count was?
What was this? What
Your
was this?
first
The
your first your first major league hit, in Colorado.
count. It might have been. I think I had two strikes.
Yeah, two strikes. It was one ball and two strikes.
1-2. I was going to say 1-2. I didn't know if it was 1-2 or 0-2.
Yeah, 1-2, and I'm sitting there watching it, and it looks like a really nice CNI single. It's like you went down and got a little, I don't know if it was a change up or what, but it was looked like it
Yeah.
was down and away.
Yeah, it was like a
And
little slider down, and I just kind of
yeah.
made sure to not pull it and roll it over. I tried to stay through the middle and squeaked it through.
Hey man. So was that a relief? Was your heart pounding through your chest when you were on first base?
It was actually not, it was less than when I was hitting, because I had gotten it out of the way. So
There you
that's when
go.
it started to slow down a little bit. But yeah, before that, every time you see somebody make a debut, it's all about the first hit. So I'll take that, but you always joke about it in the minor leagues, like you don't want your hit to be a little infield single or something like that. But then once you get it out of the way, you don't care what it was.
No, man,
You just want it to get out of the way.
you just want to get on base. I mean,
Yeah.
I remember when Alex Bregman first came up, or everybody was all over him. He was like 0 for, I don't know, 27. I mean, he was, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
Yeah.
and then you have guys that will debut with a home run or two home runs
Yeah,
or something real.
exactly.
Dude, I just would think getting on base would be like, okay, man, I cracked that. And so you got that first major league hit. When did you get your first home run? 'Cause I saw you got a couple home runs on the season. Do you remember who your first home run
I
was
don't
off of?
remember who it was off of, but I know it was against the Dodgers. It was in like the eighth inning. It was a tying 2-run homer.
So how did that feel?
That one felt pretty good, especially in the situation that it was in, was the coolest part. The fact that it was my first homer, I didn't even remember until after the game, and then everybody brings it up that it was your first homer. But in the moment, it was a big homer, so I was just thinking about the fact that I tied the game, not that it was my first one.
That's very cool. He said, so you hit your first homer. I think it said 13 games into your major league career. It was I'm looking at it right here. It was off of, who is that right there? I'm sitting here trying to. It is off of course, my computer's fuzzy. A number 65. I can't. Oh, Sadler, a
Yeah,
right-hander.
I think that's it.
You got pretty pumped now. Do you have your first hit ball, and do you have your first home run ball?
Yeah, I have both of them.
Awesome. That is so cool. Now, did you for the home run, was that something where like the fan gave it to you, and did you have
Yeah,
any interaction with the
he made
fan?
me yeah, he made me trade. He wanted to trade for it, so I gave him some cleats. Signed, and think that's it. Maybe some batting gloves.
Okay, so he wasn't too demanding.
No, yeah, it wasn't too bad.
So I have a question about that, because I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge like autograph buff. I like meeting players. I like memorabilia. For a player, from your perspective, Does stuff like that sometimes get out of hands? Like, do fans sometimes expect more than what you're really willing to give them? I mean, I'm sure it's
I
different
mean,
in
yeah,
every situation.
it happens, but I mean, I kind of just think it's, I don't ever take offense to it
Right.
because it doesn't ever hurt to ask. I mean, you could possibly get it, but just sometimes when they ask for funny stuff, like, can I get your bat or
Right.
can I get your glove? You're like, well, I mean, I kind of need these things. I mean, sometimes you can give away an extra bat that maybe you've already used or you don't like or you haven't used it yet, but sometimes, I mean, especially baseball players, I know a lot of them are superstitious, so
Yeah.
they've been taking BP with that bat or they've been hitting with good with that bat. It's kind of tough for guys to give up stuff like that. Batting gloves and stuff like that, you can give away sometimes. It kind of depends on if you're superstitious or not.
No, yeah, you
But
don't
yeah,
want
I
it.
mean, I never take offense to any of it. I if it's a good ask, I might give it to them. If it's out of the ordinator, it's something I actually need, I'll just laugh and tell them I need it.
You know, back in, so I'm gonna date myself a little bit here, but growing up, I was a big Mark McGwire fan, and
Nice.
I got to meet him. I got his autograph in '98 when he was chasing the home run record. And someone in Houston had stolen his jock strap out of the locker room. And he talked about it on ABC 13 here in Houston and talked about how he had had that since like his USC days. And he really wondered why people would want to take that. And he joked about it being his lucky jock strap, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, no, a lot of people, some people lose some things like that. It could be a tough couple days.
For real. So hey, when we interviewed you, I remember distinctly you talking about how you had noticed some of the adjustments that Josh Reddick had made, and you had taken notes when you went to Corpus. You said you were trying to pull the ball, you're trying to hit the long ball, and then you realized Corpus wasn't really the place for home runs. And then you started really using like all areas of the field, the opposite field, like you had mentioned there on your first hit, rolling over on the ball, things like that.
Yes.
So you made some improvements. Those improvements and those things that you did in AAA, do those things translate into the big show when you get there, or do you just have to continue to make more adjustments because the pitching just gets that much better?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. I mean, you do want those adjustments that were helping me in the minor leagues. You want to translate everything that you were doing. It's the same game. I mean, obviously the pitchers are going to be a little bit better and their strategies might be a little bit better. So that's where your adjustments are changing. But the adjustments when it comes to your own swing, those are the what you want to try to keep the same. The biggest thing is making that jump from the minor leagues to the big leagues and keeping those things the same. That's the struggle that I face and that a lot of people face is that you go up and then you try to do something different, or you start questioning the things that were working when in reality you might just need to readjust your approach on how you're getting attacked.
Okay, yeah, that's true. And I guess maybe one of the advantages of coming in as a rookie is there's not a whole lot of tape on you. There's not a whole lot of they're like, oh, look at all this footage of this guy and look what he does in a 3-2 count and look what, you know what I'm saying? So
Well, so that's
maybe,
what I thought.
oh, that's what you thought,
That's what,
okay.
yeah, that's the common misconception, I think, is that even players have. And it's happened to other players that I talked to when I was in Round Rock when Jack Mayfield got called up and some of those other guys goes or others got other guys went up and came back down and they talk about how you go up thinking like, oh, they don't have a scouting report on me, they're just gonna throw me heaters and I'm gonna get good pitches to hit. When it doesn't go like that, they have a job to do, and it doesn't matter if it's your first day in the big leagues. They're pulling up a scouting report any way they can. So even when I was on the Diamondbacks and we had guys making debuts for other teams, they pull up their minor league film and they pull up their minor league numbers
Okay.
and they show what's being done. So that yeah, it's nowadays.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't I don't know how much you've like studied past players. Growing up, I was a big Tony Gwynn fan, and I remember one time seeing an interview with him, and this is before I can't imagine how good of a hitter Tony Gwynn would be today with all the analytics we have.
Oh yeah,
I think he'd probably hit 500. I mean, but the guy, I remember him talking about how he had a VCR, a VHS tape on every pitcher in both leagues, even though he didn't play in, you know, because there wasn't interleague play for a while. And I was like, good Lord, that is awesome. And now you can just drop a digital file somewhere and, you know, watch it and look at it. And I mean, almost instantaneously.
Yeah. Yeah. You can go in the locker room and at any point, and you can look up every pitch somebody's throwing in low A.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So this off season, obviously each year when the season ends, you have like time, like downtime, you have time to kind of get your body back, you know, get your strength back. But what are some things you're focusing on baseball wise this off season?
I'm really just trying to attack it the same way I did last off season. And just that I'm going to try to stay mobile. Because I know when I'm flexible and I can move, I'm going to be healthy. And then I just want to stay strong in the areas that keep me healthy on the field, keep my legs, my core, shoulders, stuff like that. Put a big emphasis on those things along with flexibility. And I know that I give myself the best chance to be on the field every day, which is my main goal is health. I mean, without health, you can't really play.
Exactly. Yeah, you've got to be able to say, put me in, coach, each and every day. And with the grueling schedule that y'all have, I can imagine that even as you get older, that that it gets tougher each year. I mean, you're still pretty young. You're pretty, you know, spry young man there. But I'm sure each year it becomes more and more of a challenge. So do you have any goals going into the season? Like, I don't know if you have statistical goals. I don't know if you, or are you just focused on, I want to have a great spring training. I want to make, you know, I want to be the guy. I want to be the left fielder or whatever. Do you have any like goals going into being a part of the Diamondbacks day in and day out?
No. Yeah. That's my only goal right now, is to try to have a good spring training and compete for a job in the big leagues. That's my main goal, and then whatever happens after that is just kind of, you just got to let it play out and work as hard as you can. And I think last year was my first year not really focusing on numbers, and it was my best year yet. So
okay,
I think I approach it better that way. Whereas the year before, the couple years before, you go into the season with an idea of how many homers you want to hit, how many doubles you want to hit, and then when you start to come up short of that mark, or when your pace is a little bit short, then you start to worry and press and start to second guess everything you've been doing. So last year I didn't really have any numbers goals. I kind of just wanted to do as well as I can and focus on that. And I think I didn't have to look at my numbers ever and think like, oh, I need to hit more homers, or I need to do this, I need to do that. I kind of just kept with the grind and kept trying to get on base. And then you look up at certain parts of the season and you see your numbers and you're like, okay, and I like the looks of that. It always looks good when you didn't have an expectation.
That's awesome. So I noticed you're from Glendale, Arizona. Did you grow up a Diamondbacks fan?
I did grow up a Diamondbacks fan.
So was this sort of the icing on the cake, things coming full circle, that the club you grew up rooting for wanted you in a trade and got you? And I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool to kind of go to the stadium for the first time as a player and drive from home to go to the stadium. Those things are pretty crazy to go through. What's that?
I'm just saying because you were pretty young when they won the World Series, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, I was very young, but I do remember having that tape, the seven game series DVD, and watching that.
Nice. Oh, dude, that was beautiful. Anytime I can see someone beat the New York Yankees, I don't know who it is. I don't care who it is. I had a friend I grew up with, and he's from Greenville, Mississippi. And he had moved back by then, you know, after high school and everything. He moved back to Mississippi. He flew out to that game 7. I mean, he spent a ton of money on hotel and tickets. And to this day, he's like, that was like the greatest game and the worst game all in one for me, because he was a big Andy Pettit guy and Yankees fan. And so, yeah, I remember that World Series. That was something else.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy series.
So a couple more things. So you have 41 games under your belt from this last season. Now, to qualify for a rookie officially, how many games do you have to play? Do you know what the game total is?
I'm not sure. I've heard that I'm over the limit.
Okay.
But I don't know, because I never looked it up. I didn't really look into it.
Okay. Because I was going to ask, like, if you were to, you know, able to garner that spot, garner a position, and, you know, be with the club all season, would you be able to consider that your rookie campaign, or do you think this last season that's considered your rookie campaign?
I wasn't. I'm not sure. I've heard, like I've said, I've heard that I went over the limit on games, because I don't know if it's service days or games actually played.
Okay.
So that's one thing I don't know. But yeah, even if I did know which one it was, I don't know how it works. So I'd have to probably ask somebody to find out.
Yeah, I'm sitting there. You're like, I don't know, Brett. This is a pretty thorough interview. Sorry. So you will be competing to be the everyday left fielder, correct?
I'm not. I actually don't know. I don't know what.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm actually working this off season on being available anywhere. So the number one position I need to work on most is center field.
Okay.
I have a good amount of games in left and right. So, yeah, center field is going to be my main focus, just so that when I show up in spring training, wherever they plan on moving somebody else, I kind of want to be that guy that fits wherever I'm needed.
Awesome.
Well, I don't really want to show up and have one position of mine and maybe it's not available.
No, right. You want to be versatile. And it really seems like, especially in today's game, there's not just situational pitching. It seems like there are guys on teams that serve a pretty good role situationally. I know the Astros do that really well. They've done that with Fisher. They did that with Miles Straw this last year. They were doing that with Jake Marisnyk, you know, for like 6 seasons he did it. Yeah. You know, he's now with the Mets. So there's definitely something to be said about someone that can put in solid work in multiple positions. I think it makes you more valuable and probably keeps your value up there with them, you know, going into next season. So just to kind of wrap things up, a couple more questions. Since this is an Astros podcast, what can you tell the fans out there about your time with the Astros organization? I know we talked a little bit about this when you were at Round Rock. You know, maybe one or two things that they helped you with. And do you look forward, you know, actually, let's answer those questions. And I got one more. So what are some things that you feel like you took away from your time with the Houston Astros?
Yeah, so it's actually a question that's come up quite a bit, and I've thought about it, and I've actually given a lot of different answers.
Okay.
Because as I think about it more, it was when I got drafted by the Astros, I had a lot of work to put in. I was a late round draft pick. It was kind of they were just giving me a chance, and I think they made that clear after the first half season. I had a good year, and I made a lot of adjustments in the first month. I remember I was making tons of adjustments and trying to learn how it works in professional baseball. And I mean, it's a different game kind of. So when I first got drafted, I had a lot to learn, and the Astros did a great job of teaching me and made it very clear on what they wanted me to know. And after that first season, I went straight to Instructs, where it was another 2 weeks of just straight learning, learning what the Astros wanted from us, what their goals are for us, and how it was going to be. So I think from the time I got drafted to the time I got traded, I was improving every single day, even throughout the off seasons. So, I mean, 2 years of of getting better every day. I mean, I learned so much and owe a lot to the coaches and staff in that organization.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you know, and when you look at your numbers through your minor league, you know, career, I mean, you had three solid seasons. You know, you see a lot, or I see a lot when I look at numbers, it seems like more times than not, guys will go in and maybe they'll have like a really hot start, and then they'll get promoted and they'll jump levels. And then they'll just kind of hit some flat line. They'll plateau. Their numbers will drop. Then they kind of ping pong back and forth in the lower levels. And it seems like I mean, you really stayed consistent with like with your average, with some of your power stuff. I mean, your doubles especially. I noticed triples. I mean, you kind of did it all. You know, you got I don't know if you know this. You had 318 hits. In your three seasons and 41 home runs, which is I think pretty substantial for just being there in three seasons. And that's between several different clubs. So you're having to go from league to league, from town to town.
Yeah, I
And
mean, that is pretty cool. I never thought about, I never even saw that.
yeah,
But
man, I mean,
I think the thing with that organization though is it's kind of the standard that they're setting, and it's really good. I think their way they're going about it right now is really good, because a lot of the things that they do to try to prevent, well, I mean, I guess it wouldn't prevent because it can go the other way too, but the adjustments that they have everybody making and the adjustments that they try to teach each individual, which is different for everybody, but what they try to teach you is always based on how it's going to play out in the big leagues.
okay.
So like when I was in low or high A, there might be things that I'm doing well, but instead of just looking at numbers and saying like, oh, you have good numbers, you'll be good enough for whatever. You're good enough for this league, you can go up to the next league. Instead of saying that, they'll look at your attributes, maybe it's your arm angle, or maybe it's your swing, or how you run bases, and they look at all these different things, like the littlest things, even preset on defense and stuff like that. They look at all these things and they're comparing it. As soon as you get into the system, they're comparing it to the big leagues.
Wow.
Like, even though you're in low A, if your preset and your first step isn't as good as a major league average, then you're not there yet. We need to improve that. So, and that's what I did every day for 2.5 years, was constantly comparing what you can do to how good major leaguers do it. And if you're not there yet, then you keep improving till you get there. Instead of kind of just being the guy that hits 300 in double A with good homers, and then you come back the next year and you do the same thing. But when you go up, that's when it gets tougher. So I think that's what they try to prevent, and
Oh
it's doing a good job.
no, yeah. I mean, and with the success of the ball clubs, I know even after you left, they had a really decent, you know, playoff run. It seemed like all these guys were flying off the shelves there for a minute. We were, I think, as fans concerned, like, oh my gosh, we're not going to have any minor league system left if we keep trading these guys away. But so. I know that you guys play two games against Houston in Arizona, and then y'all play two games at Minute Maid Park. Is that something you kind of look forward to, playing the Houston Astros? Now, it's not like you know, you play with the club 5 or 6 years, and then you're going back to your old club. But there's a chance that when you go out there on the field, you're going to be out there possibly with some guys that you play with, Miles Straw and guys like that.
Yeah, no, that would be actually, I didn't know if we played them or when or how many times, but now that you just told me, yeah, that's pretty exciting, because when I got traded to Reno, I was hoping that we'd play Round Rock, just because, I mean, I played with some of those guys for so long and we competed. Like, I know how they compete, I know what they're like when they compete, and I've competed with them for so long that it'd be kind of fun to get on the other side and try to use how I know they compete against them, and so it'll be fun. It would be fun to face any of those guys. Toro, he's
Yeah,
one of my good
definitely.
friends. Straw, who's in the big leagues. Tucker. So yeah, those are some of the guys I played a lot with. It would be cool to play against.
Yeah, so okay, so I can be your scheduling manager or your agent, whichever one you want to hire me for. Y'all play April 28th and 29th in Phoenix, and then y'all play just two games, which I don't understand why Major League Baseball gives, they love giving Arizona and Houston two game sets. I don't know why. And then y'all play at Minute Maid Park August 4th and 5th. And the August 5th is actually an 11:10, well, Mountain Time start. Okay, that's probably like a 1 o'clock game in Houston. So there you go. I'm definitely gonna, my son and I are definitely gonna mark our calendars for August 4th and 5th, and we're gonna try to be at both those games because we'd like to see you again and get a picture with you this time in a major league uniform. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that would be sweet.
So that would be cool, man. You know, Josh, I do appreciate your time. And I really look forward to seeing what this new year is going to bring you. I just blessings to you and, you know, your hard work, and definitely send our best to Seth Beer. We're all going to be sad that we can't wear shirts that say Beer 30 on the back. But you know, just again, thanks for taking time out. Maybe later on, maybe towards the end of the season, maybe the All-Star break, we can get together again on the podcast
Yeah, of
and
course.
you know, talk.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Josh, thanks. You have a good one. Good luck, and we will definitely be looking for Mr. Rojas, or as the MLB website calls you, says your nickname is Ro.
Yes, nice.
All right. Well,
All
go
right, thanks
row.
for having me.
All right, brother. Have a good one.
All right, thank you.
All right. Bye.